It's a pleasure to be back here in Knoxville and East Tennessee in particular. To start out, I'd like to acknowledge some people. I'd like to acknowledge Matt Murray to my left here, who first for the invitation, Matt, and I'm sure Marianne was involved, and also for Matt's work collaborating with our economists in Atlanta and his colleagues at UT's Center for Business and Economic Research. We found the center's work to be an essential aspect of our understanding of Tennessee's economic performance. So, Matt, thank you very much. Lee Jones, who is right here. Lee, stand up and show them your tie, please. Lee's not dumb, and he is our... He's our regional executive for Tennessee. He's in Nashville. And I also want to acknowledge some of our directors who are here. Jenny Banner. Jenny Banner is the CEO of Schad Companies, who's on our Tennessee or our Nashville board, as well as Billy Carroll, a new arrival on our board. Billy is from Pigeon Forge. Billy is the CEO of Smart Bank in Pigeon Forge. And both Jenny and Billy follow someone you probably know, Deborah London, formerly the CEO of Mercy Health Partners. And they all represent East Tennessee in the deliberations that we have that run up to the FOMC meetings. We have board meetings in Nashville or somewhere in Tennessee, typically 2 weeks in advance of the FOMC meetings. And then we get a lot of information from them, and that helps me form my views for those meetings. Each puts in a lot of time, and they help us understand what you business people in the audience and consumers are actually experiencing. Here's what I would like to do this morning. I will take a few minutes to give you as close as possible and up to the minute take on the state of the national economy. And I'll include in that my sense of the near and medium-term outlook. I'd then like to use the remainder of my time to take a deep dive, as they say, into a vital element of the country's economic fortunes that I know is important in East Tennessee, and that is the manufacturing sector. It's important that I now ritualistically state my usual disclaimer, and that is that I want to say up front that what you hear today are my views and my views alone. They may not be shared by my colleagues on the Federal Open Market Committee or in the Federal Reserve System. So now that's done. I always have to do that. So let me talk about the economy and the outlook to start. The economy is now in its eighth quarter of expansion. Private demand grew at a very strong pace toward the end of last year. The incoming data suggests that the economy continued to expand in the first quarter, but at a slower pace than was expected based on the strength of the fourth quarter. The economy has some things helping it grow and some things holding it back and preventing more rapid improvement. Let me catalog these factors for you. Positive forces include growing consumer activity, sustained strong business investment in equipment and software, pretty strong exports, and rising availability and use of credit by businesses and consumers, and in the case of consumers, particularly for durable goods such as autos. Restraining forces include a weak housing sector, affecting both construction activity and consumer confidence, rising gasoline and energy prices, with obviously continuing concern about the course of events in the Middle East and North Africa, and a clutch of other concerns and uncertainties, including the path of inflation, the still high level of unemployment, the resolution of fiscal policies in Washington, and the impact of fiscal adjustment at all government levels. Among manufacturers, there is concern now about supply chain disruption resulting from the recent events in Japan. The recent housing market data have been particularly disappointing, and this information weighs on the consumer psyche. Consumer confidence and spending have been weaker than many were expecting. On the positive side, however, the employment or the labor market picture has improved in recent months, and I would say industrial activity data remain very strong. So the picture is mixed. There are certainly factors both positive and negative at work. Although the economy may have lost some momentum at the start of the year, and notwithstanding the factors exerting a drag on growth, I continue to expect a continuing moderate pace of expansion. This will gradually bring down the level of unemployment. I'm also forecasting that the composite inflation measures will level off around a rate consistent with the Fed's price stability mandate. I'll come back to this point and talk a bit more about inflation at the end of my remarks. The recovery is proceeding in part because of a relatively strong rebound in manufacturing production and employment from the depth of the recession. In 2010, last year, both production and employment in manufacturing industries outpaced growth in the rest of the economy. Strong foreign demand for U.S.-made goods boosted manufactured exports, which last year made the largest contribution to GDP, that's gross domestic product, the growth of GDP since the Second World War. The latest data show that the manufacturing sector has sustained strong production gains recorded last year in 2010. Manufacturing output expanded at an annualized rate of approximately 9% in January and February. The Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, a timely and important indicator, remained at strong levels through March. This index encompasses information on production, factory orders, shipments, and inventory data. The rebound of this index has been the strongest since the rebound following the deep recession of the early 1980s. So now let me walk you through a discussion of the status of and the outlook for the manufacturing sector. And I'll cover the following points: a definition of manufacturing, that is, what industries are included in measures of production, for example; the current profile of manufacturing in America. Here I will comment on the evolution of the sector over recent decades; manufacturing as a source of employment; and finally, how manufacturing costs factor into inflation outcomes in the greater economy. To start, for level setting purposes, I'll define what the term manufacturing encompasses in the U.S. economy. The sector encompasses a great number of industries and activities, from raw steel production to auto manufacturing or motor vehicle assembly to water bottling and oyster shucking. Yes, even light processing of products of nature, water or oysters, is considered manufacturing. The Department of Commerce has 473 classifications under the rubric manufacturing. The manufacturing sector includes establishments. This is a term of art that economists use. Establishments such as factories, plants, and mills. You can think of establishments as individual sites where manufacturing activity occurs. A company may have multiple sites. There are approximately 340,000 manufacturing establishments in the United States. These establishments produce goods through mechanical, physical, or chemical transformation of various materials, both raw materials and already manufactured goods. These are transformed into both semi-finished and finished goods. a number of industries, and a good example is the auto industry, which is, of course, is important in Tennessee, employ the supply chain model where lead companies do the final assembly as well as product design. Product design, brand management, and distribution. And then feeding the assembly line are tiers of suppliers who manufacture components. Manufacturers of components, in turn, rely on their producers and suppliers of raw materials. Manufacturing output represents about 11% of the U.S. economy in real GDP terms. It may surprise you that this percentage has been relatively constant over several decades. A lot has been written about growing demand for Chinese-made goods and how China's manufacturing sector is expanding rapidly. Well, certainly that's true, but despite China's rapid growth, the United States remains the world's largest manufacturer. According to United Nations data, the United States accounts for one-fifth of global manufacturing output in real terms. That share has held largely constant for the past 20 years. The United States' high share of global manufacturing output to a significant degree reflects the size of the U.S. economy and domestic demand. Although U.S. exports have grown rapidly, and as I said earlier, have been relatively strong recently, the United States is not the world's largest goods exporter. China and Germany export more manufactured goods than the United States. In the current recovery, manufacturing production has grown faster than total GDP. But while GDP has already reached pre-recession levels, manufacturing output is still about 10% lower than 3 years ago because of its outsized decline during the recession. Performance within the manufacturing sector has varied widely across industries during the recession and afterwards. Some industries, such as apparel, were in secular decline for many years. Domestic apparel manufacturing was hard hit by the recession and has benefited little from the recovery. Other industries have experienced cyclical swings. Metals production, for example, contracted, then expanded, largely in sync with the economy. And a few industries, notably the computer and electronic products industries, rose strongly for many years, slowed only briefly during the recession. Computer and electronics products output is nearly 20% higher than before the recession. Coming back to the long view, while manufacturing output through the years maintained its share of total GDP, manufacturing's share of jobs has steadily declined. In the 1950s, almost one in three payroll jobs was in manufacturing. Today, that number is less than one in ten. In terms of absolute employment levels, the number of manufacturing jobs fell almost 5 million over the last decade and currently stands at around 11.6 million after remaining relatively stable during the 1980s and 1990s. In contrast, manufacturing output over this period has grown at about the same pace as the overall economy. Obviously, increasing production combined with stable or falling employment is only possible if productivity is rising. Output per worker has increased faster on average in manufacturing than in the overall economy. In many cases, productivity gains in manufacturing have been the result of automation and robotization. In other cases, productivity gains have been realized by reconfiguring production processes, including the offshoring of more labor-intensive early-stage component production to locations where labor is cheaper. Higher productivity has translated into higher wages. Although employment in the manufacturing sector is much lower than 20 years ago, manufacturing wages remain higher than average wages and have been growing faster. Currently, the average weekly wage in the manufacturing sector is nearly $200 higher than the average for all private industries, double the premium of 20 years earlier. This increased wage premium reflects the changed mix of jobs and relatively higher skill requirements in the manufacturing sector today. So to summarize, I want to summarize in very basic terms. Output level up. Output share steady. Employment down. Productivity up. Therefore, wages up. That's the manufacturing story in a few words. I'm aware that there is a lot of angst in the United States about the manufacturing sector. In part, this is driven by the fact that the sector is no longer the generator of jobs it once was. Realistically, the future of the manufacturing sector depends on its ability to change and reinvent itself in response to global competitive pressures. So far, the sector has done this pretty successfully. In my view, to paraphrase Mark Twain, reports of the demise of U.S. manufacturing have been greatly exaggerated. Now I'd like to come back to the subject of inflation, which is mostly not a story connected to manufacturing. As I said before, my expectation is that commodity price increases that are now translating into accelerating headline inflation will be transitory. In support of this claim, I'll make 3 points. First, these increases have been driven by global pressures in markets for food commodities, energy, and other commodities. These pressures are largely the result of supply and demand factors, some of which are one-off in nature. Second, inflation indices are made up of a wide spectrum of goods and services that don't uniformly have these commodities as inputs. Roughly two-thirds of consumer spending is now on services, which are not materials intensive. And third, to the extent that some goods and services have these commodity inputs, the pass-through to ultimate consumer prices is limited. Historically, prices for industrial commodities have tended to exert a relatively small effect on most ultimate consumer prices. Even when commodity prices rise at double-digit rates, prices of most intermediate and final goods usually increase considerably less. In the short term, producers tend to absorb some of the cost increases in margins because of competitive pressures. Over time, in the face of higher input costs, manufacturers also shift to lower cost production methods in order to maintain price competitiveness. In addition, for most goods, materials costs now are small relative to other costs. Looking ahead, this is not to say there will be no pass-through or effect on inflation. The point is the effect is likely to be muted. It is, of course, the Federal Reserve's responsibility to ensure that temporary ups and downs in the rate of headline consumer inflation do not turn into a persistent inflationary trend. In my view, the objective is growth in overall consumer prices at an annual rate of about 2%. And I think the relevant period for judging success is a medium-term period of 3 to 4 years. A key factor influencing price stability is the inflation expectations of you, the public, and investors. My colleagues and I are watching various measures of long-term inflation expectations for signs that the public sentiment about longer-term inflation trends is shifting. At the moment, with longer-term inflation expectations remaining relatively stable and predicting that commodity price growth will stabilize, my view is that current monetary policy is appropriate. My view of the future permits a degree of patience as regards monetary policy. There is still a halting and fragile quality to the economy. I think the process of restoration of full economic strength with higher employment continues to require support. That said, planning for an eventual change of course is completely appropriate as long as public discussion about planning deliberations and the plan itself don't create premature expectations of tightening. So with those remarks, I thank you very much for your attention. It's been great to be with you here in Knoxville. Thank you.